Today, no ring. Is someone else involved?
I'm not here to discuss that, Alice.
Is he handsome?
If you like that sort of thing, I guess.
Are you in pain?
You don't understand love, Alice. It's not your fault. You can mimic it, and I guess you can recognize it in other people, but you will never be able to understand love.
Hello, and welcome to the Anglophiles podcast. This is a podcast where two Americans talk about British TV. I'm Danny.
And I'm Sheldon.
And it has been an interesting week. How are you doing?
I am not hungover anymore.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. The past weekend, we are recording this right after Valentine's Day weekend, President's Day weekend.
Yeah, we went to an 80s prom party. Really big 80s prom party, and you dressed as a British pop star.
Yes, Adam Ant.
Adam Ant. It's a bold look.
I looked really cool.
I think you pulled it off, though. You looked really good.
I think I did. A lot of people were asking for pictures with me.
That's how you know you did a really good job with your costume.
Yeah. But then there was one woman who was very upset that I didn't know Adam Ant is coming to Los Angeles this fall.
He's going to play.
Yeah, she came up to me more than once and asked me about it.
Oh, interesting. She was probably drinking.
Yes, I mean, I think most of us were. but 80s prom is delightful.
Yeah.
If you ever find yourself in Los Angeles in February, there's always an 80s prom. You should definitely go.
My only problem with it, and I love it, we've been going for like 4 years now. My only problem with the 80s prom here in Hollywood is they play a lot of American 80s music. Which is really good music, but
yeah.
Because of watching, like, 80s Top of the Pops, I really am like, why aren't they playing Duran Duran? And, like, why aren't they playing more of The Cure? Like, what's happening?
I feel like most of the people who are there are casual 80s fans. I don't think a lot of the people who are there are well-versed in British 80s music.
I guess so. It's just that, like... Like, new wave and, like, synth music, like, started in England. Like, that's where it happened, so...
I mean, they didn't play any synth, really. Like, they were very much more
Blue Monday.
Okay. But it was very much more rock-centered, like, hair bands and stuff.
Well, one day, I'm gonna throw my own 80s prom, and it's gonna be all, like, Thompson Twins... Spandau Ballet. It's gonna be, like, all my favorite British...
it's gonna be very morose.
It's gonna be... Oh, so amazing.
well, I think you gotta have the upbeat, exciting songs to get people to dance and move. Like,
no, I want, like, a goth club. I guess that's what I want. It's like an 80s goth club.
Okay, but it's prom.
Yeah. We have an email this week.
Ooh, who's it from?
This is an email from David Cook.
Ooh, thank you, David.
So he's written in. So he says... Hi, guys. As a Brit living in Spain, love the show and have just listened to Only Fools and Horses, one of the best comedy TV series ever.
Agreed.
As you love David Jason, Danny, check out the cop series Frost, in which he plays the central character. Great performance as a lonely, curmudgeonly, middle-aged cop.
Love a curmudgeonly cop.
I would love to watch that. I really love David Jason. He says, another suggestion, and surprised you haven't featured it already, is the comedy series Dad's Army, made in the 70s and still being shown on Saturday evenings on the BBC. Not a hilarious comedy as such, but features some beautifully drawn British characters and depicts English society during World War II with its class system and suspicion of anything foreign. One of the later episodes even depicts the arrival of the Yankee forces prior to Normandy. Finally, something more 21st century, check out Peep Show, one of my favorite comedies ever. Enjoy! David Cook, Barcelona.
Thank you, David. David Mitchell is one of my favorite humans living. So honestly, I can't believe we haven't done anything of his. Like, we have to do Peep Show. We have to do What I Lie to You.
I've seen a lot of Peep Show. How much have you seen?
Some of it, it's hard to watch.
It's
so good. I don't enjoy the camera. Like, I don't... It's hard for me to watch visually.
Okay.
Like, the jokes are there. I enjoy it. But, like, it's too jarring.
That was the first thing I ever saw Olivia Colman in was Peep Show.
Oh.
She's... What's her face? I forget her name, but...
I think I saw Hot Fuzz first.
Oh. Yeah, maybe I did. But, like, that was the first thing that I saw her, like, over and over again. It was like, ooh, she's funny. Yeah, we love Peep Show. We will have to cover it soon.
Yeah, and then Dad's Army, too. I think,
yes.
Like, I really do like a lot of war comedies. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I grew up, my parents watched MASH. I think most Americans, your parents watched MASH. Mm-hmm. But then my grandpa also watched a show called Hogan's Heroes, which features Americans in a German POW camp. Mm. And it's surprisingly good and surprisingly terrible. It swings big time.
We were just saying on our last episode that we are really big fans of 70s British comedy.
Yeah, so I think
we should check out Dad's Army.
We've been itching to jump into one. This sounds like a good one.
Cool. Well, thank you for the email, David. That was very good. Very good suggestions. Do you have any news that you want to talk about?
I do. I mean, like always, my news is something that is exciting to me.
British news.
Yeah, we need a theme song for this little segment. Like, British news.
What does BBC News music sound like?
Ooh, you're putting me on the spot. I don't know.
I don't know either.
But I mean, I wonder if it's like...
It's because all we watch are TV shows. We don't ever watch the news.
But I wonder, like, do you have, like... Do they have breaking news the same way we do? Like, I know Americans are kind of obsessed with the 24-hour news cycle, which has ruined society. But we have the do-do-do-do-do-do-do breaking news. Like, we have those, like, bulletins that come on. Like, maybe something like that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's like... It's maybe it's just like... tea, like a kettle whistling, and then it's politely saying, like, British news.
The news. Somebody send us a clip of, like, a British news segment.
Yeah, I would love to watch it.
I just want
to
see.
I've watched a bunch of Australian news segments, because they're wild down there.
That's very strange.
But I do have a little story. It's a small little thing, but I think it leads into an interesting discussion.
Okay.
So, Banksy recently painted a wall in Bristol. And less than 24 hours later, it was defaced by another graffiti artist. Granted, they didn't do much. They just wrote BCC Wanker over it with a really poorly graffitied heart. It's like about as...
Can I see?
It's about as low energy of tagging as you could do. But it makes me think, you know, like, they graffitied over graffiti.
Yeah.
Like, they vandalized vandalism.
Yeah.
Even though we have decided as a society one is art and the other is vandalism, like, they're both still wrong.
They're both something that somebody put on the wall.
Right, without the people who own the wall asking for it to be there.
Yeah.
And Banksy has a great quote where he says something along the lines of, people say that graffiti is ugly, irresponsible, and childish, but that's only if it's done properly. So, like, even at its best, graffiti has, like, a low bar. Like, it's not well-received.
Yeah.
But also, I think Banksy kind of would seem like the person that would want to have it defaced in a weird way.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
But
didn't Banksy shred his own painting?
Oh, yeah. So that it wouldn't get purchased.
Or they.
Now, Banksy is the guy from Massive Attack, I'm sure.
That's what I've heard, but...
That's the prevailing theory.
That's what I've heard.
Just because most of, like, the big ones, like, the big older ones, were all happening around Massive Attack tour dates.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not somebody who's in Massive Attack, it's somebody who travels with them.
Speaking of Massive Attack, do you know how Massive Attack relates to our current topic?
No, tell me.
I'm pretty sure Massive Attack does the theme song for the show we're covering.
Ooh, well, we'll get into that in a couple minutes. I mean, you already know if you've read the title of the episode, but we'll get into that. What do you have? That's kind of all I have is just that little bit of graffiti.
So, the news that I have this week, it's not really news, it's more just, like, something interesting. I guess that's what news is.
I suppose so, yeah.
So, you may have seen this, but recently there was a wildlife photography contest at the Natural History Museum in London, and there were over 48,000 images that were
submitted,
and then the public voted, and the winning picture is this.
Yeah, I've seen this photo.
It's two mice fighting over food in a subway station.
In the underground, yeah.
This photo is so good. It looks staged.
Like, it looks like you would take two taxidermied mice and put them there, you know?
Well, the shot is so good because, like, it's shot, like, from ground level. Like, the photographer's laying on the ground. And then it kind of shows, you can see the tube tunnel in the background. And it's really wide, so you're really seeing how huge the space is. And right there
and how small they are.
Yeah, right there in the middle of it is two just little mice fighting. And the reason I think it's so funny is because it looks like two buddies, like two mates who were, like, just, they were out drinking for the night, and now they're like, oi.
Yeah, somebody's getting a little randy.
They're starting to, like, punch each other in the subway station after a long night of drinking. But yeah, so the article, this is from BBC News, it says, the sight of two mice scurrying across a London underground platform in the evening is, to many, an unwelcome feature of the city, but a young photographer is hoping his award-winning shot changes that perception. And then they talk about his photo called Station Squabble. And he says, to quote about his own photograph, with the majority of the world living in urban areas and cities now, you will have to tell the story about how people relate to wildlife. Wildlife is fantastic, and I think we need to appreciate the smaller and supposedly more difficult animals to live with. Hmm. I think that's cool.
I like that, yeah.
It's really cool. And speaking of staged, it's not staged, but his friend sent him a video of two mice fighting on the subway one day. And so he made it his goal to find that.
He's
and
like,
so
I'm going to catch
he
these
laid
mice.
Down in a lot of subway stations trying to get the shot. But he got
just
it.
Just waiting.
And he won. So good for him.
Yeah, that is good.
So, do you want to get to our topic?
I would love to.
Speaking of Massive Attack, they do the theme song for the show Luther. Yeah, we're going to cover it this week.
Which is a show that somehow I hadn't watched until this.
I'm kind of surprised you hadn't, because you really like Idris Elba.
I love Idris Elba, and I love a good crime drama. Like, that's one of the only types of dramas I'll watch, is a good crime one. And I think that's probably why I was hesitant to start, because, like, I know Idris Elba first from, like, stuff like The Wire, and I know he has done all these amazing performances, and I've heard that he's great in Luther.
Yeah.
But then I've also watched all these really great detective shows, like, that I was just afraid, like, it's not going to live up. Like, and I don't want to tell people, like, I didn't like your that show that you really love.
Yeah.
But I was way wrong. This show is good.
I mean, really glad that you liked it.
There are some times where it's a little terrible, but mostly it's good. It's like 90% a great show.
This was, I think, definitely the first British crime procedural that I watched. Because I got really into British comedies first and was very into that. And then a couple of, like, period pieces.
Watched this before Sherlock?
Maybe.
Wow, interesting.
Maybe. Whichever one Netflix had first, because I remember discovering this, and it was one of the first, like...
I could be wrong, but I think Sherlock came out first.
I think so, too, but I just remember seeing it. I got around to Sherlock way late.
Okay.
Like, way late, I think.
And see, I was early on that bandwagon.
I think season one had come out, and everyone had kind of seen it. Anyway, so here's the description from Google. Luther is a brilliant but emotionally impulsive detective who is tormented by the dark side of humanity while hunting down murderers. Once the self-destructive detective knows the killer's identity, it becomes a psychological duel between predator and prey. And I think that's a really good depiction or description of the show.
Yeah, I think a very general description.
For sure, but it does kind of capture, like, what it's about. You know, it's about him finding all of these really depraved killers, but then him having to wrestle with what he's seeing, and then all of his, like, interpersonal drama that's happening on the side.
And I think it does a good job of showing that he understands humanity. He understands the bad that is within people, but a lot of the times he understands just a little too late. Like, he picks it up and he can't quite get there in time.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that more than another show where, like, they would catch the guy right about to kill the person. You're like, no, you got him, though. You stopped him in his tracks.
Yeah.
But in Luther, it's like, oh, no, you didn't catch him in time. And here are the consequences.
Yeah.
And that's gripping.
Yeah. It's really good. It's a really dark show.
It's a very dark show. And I think very goofy at times. Like, they're... I mean, I'm sure we're going to get all into the relationship between him and Alice Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
it's one of the most, like, unbelievable relationships on TV, but their chemistry is so off the charts, you don't care. You forgive all the bad writing, and you're just like, yeah, yeah, another scene with the two of you. Yeah. I don't care. Like, do something else crazy.
True.
Is she going to murder one of your friends? Probably.
Yeah, let's talk about the cast a little bit. So, Idris Elba is John Luther.
DCI, John Luther.
It also has Dermot Crowley as DSU Martin Shank.
And he comes along at the end of the first season, and then he becomes, like, a big character second season on.
I like him.
You really love, though...
Michael Smiley.
Yep, as Benny.
As Benny. I love Benny.
Yeah, that
he's
was...
one of my favorite characters of the show.
One of the... by the way, we're going to spoil the heck out of this show. True. We're going to talk about all five seasons, and this is a show where there are a lot of spoilers, so if you haven't seen it and plan on it, maybe pause this podcast and come back later.
This also has Warren Brown as DS Justin Ripley.
See, that's who I think I love the way you
Another
love Benny.
Another very good character.
Oh, poor Justin.
Ruth Wilson as Alice Morgan.
Yeah.
And she's amazing.
She's phenomenal.
Here's the crazy thing. Paul McGann as Mark.
Yeah.
Zoe's new husband. I didn't know until season 5 that that was Paul McGann.
I don't know who that is.
Oh my gosh. He played the doctor in between, like, the original doctor and the new Doctor, like, Who series. Paul McGann played the 8th Doctor. He never had a show.
It was in the movie.
He just had a movie.
Okay.
So I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah.
As much Doctor Who as I've watched, I haven't seen his movie, but I'm familiar with Paul McGann as being the 8th Doctor. I just have only ever seen him with longer hair.
I was gonna say long curly hair.
It took me so long to realize this was Paul McGann.
He looks good in this then.
He looks great.
I didn't realize he was, like, more aged then. I thought he looked very great.
He's great. Yeah, I like him. But yeah, he plays Mark North. Also later on in the show is, Nikki Amuka-Bird.
Yeah,
plays...
second, third season.
Oh, wait.
She plays DCI Erin Gray.
Yeah.
We don't like her.
Or at least cool I don't. At first, but she... Yeah.
She thinks she's a better cop than Luther.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you're not, because no one is. But... Yeah. Like, I get why somebody would want to try to take him down.
Yeah.
I don't get why somebody is like, I want to take him down because I'm a better cop than him. Like, ugh,
I
back off.
She just, her view of justice is different than Luther's. But yeah, it also has Stephen McIntosh as DCI Ian Reed.
Incredible. Love him in this show.
Good character. He's very good.
So heartbreaking at the end of the first season.
Saskia Reeves as DSU Rose Teller.
Also, just in the first season, I'm so upset that
really
she didn't come back.
Like, I really liked her. I could have done with more of her in the show.
Granted, in the show, they say it's because John Luther and Ripley get transferred into Shank's division.
Mm-hmm.
But that seems kind of like she didn't want to come back for some reason, or they didn't want her back or something. It seems like one of those, like, TV smoothed over moments where the show is missing her. We needed more of her. Her cracking ons.
There's also Indira Varma as Zoe.
Zoe. Mm.
Luther's ex-wife, or separated, I guess, at first. And then Patrick Malahide as George Cornelius.
Ooh, he's good, too.
It's a really good cast. There are some very, very talented actors on here. And speaking of talented, you and I were saying this the other day when we were watching season 3, I think. All of the people that they cast that are just in one episode who play, like... the wife who's finding out her husband's a serial killer and that kind of thing, or like the father of a woman who was murdered, like all of these little like bit roles are cast so well. The performances are insane.
Yeah, really, that's probably the best thing about the show is that everyone is giving it 110%.
Yeah.
Like, every single person is crushing it. Even if the plot doesn't make a lot of sense and you don't really know what's happening in that B plot or C plot.
There are some very, very good small roles on this show.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
I completely agree. Yes. So who do you like the most? Like, who are your favorite characters out of these people? Because, I like you said, it's such an all-star cast.
I mean, Luther's great. So I watched seasons 1 and 2 years ago. Like, gosh, 2012?
Yeah.
Something like that. And I really got into it. And I was like, this is great. And then I dropped off. I didn't ever continue watching it. I think I just... I found other shows to watch.
And it took breaks in between seasons and
it's
stuff.
It's true. But I just never was like, I gotta watch season 3 and 4. Anyway, when you and I sat down to watch this, I was like, yeah, Idris Elba's so cool in this. Like, Luther's so cool. And then I was kind of bracing myself for, like, ooh, what if I sit down and rewatch it? And
it's not so cool?
They're, like trying to make him cool, but it's cheesy, and he's just kind of, like, an annoying character. But, like, watching this, he's so watchable. He's so good in this.
Yeah.
He's so, like, cool, but, like, ferocious, but also, like, kind of tender, like he's just doing so much on this show.
Yeah,
so, yeah. Luther is.
He does a lot of acting with his eyes too.
I would say he's the best character.
And it's crazy. He's such an imposing figure just because he's a very big man.
Yeah.
But he has, like you mentioned, he has a tenderness to him mm-hmm. that like. He really can take care with some situations, or he can, like, smash things up. Like, yeah. It flips, and that's kind of scary to see his little anger come out.
In the first season, I really like that they give him this temper thing, because it's what he does when he gets that anger is not appropriate. He flips tables and, like, throws shit and, like, punches holes in doors.
Yeah,
it's not appropriate what he's doing. However, I believe a lot of his reacting is at an appropriate time.
Yeah.
It's never over something small. It's always over something kind of warranted of anger. It's just that he needs to learn how to control
and
it.
A lot of the times it's Alice that's doing it to him.
Yeah, or Zoe.
Or Zoe. I mean, I think more with Zoe, it's the situation.
Yeah.
With Alice, it's directly things she is doing.
Oh, true.
It's frustrating.
For sure. Speaking of Alice, she is also one of my favorite characters on the show.
I thought so.
She's amazing.
And
it's because of Ruth Wilson. She's so good.
She's incredible.
She's very watchable. Everything she does, like when she's on screen, you don't want to look away.
Yeah, you only want to
like,
watch her.
Do weird lip licks and like weird things with her eyes. She's mm-hmm. so creepy.
And you're just like, what line are you going to drop that
she
is going to be horrifying?
She is the Hannibal Lecter of this show.
I was going to say, like, whenever we were watching it, the relationship between her and Luther reminded me of Hannibal and, what's his name? From the...
Will Graham.
And Will Graham mm-hmm. in the latest Hannibal show.
Where it's like your opponents, your nemesis.
You understand that the two of you are a step above.
But you're drawn to each other.
Yeah. Because you understand no other police gets Luther like the way that she does. And no other criminals, I think, are to her level.
Yeah.
Like, she's a survivalist. She can get away and, like, a cockroach live to fight another day.
Yeah.
And she often
does.
She never dies. Or does she? No, she doesn't. I have a theory on that at the end.
Okay. But yeah, and then Benny and Justin are also...
Ripley.
I love both of those characters.
I yelled at the TV when he went after that guy by himself.
Yeah?
You just know he's not going to make
it. I wasn't really thinking about it, but once you saw him go after that guy without backup, you were like, this isn't good.
No.
And he died.
Because it's one of those things like... It's a cornered rat. Like, once you have somebody cornered and you push them to the limits, they took a risk thinking this guy won't kill a cop.
Yeah.
But
although, I do have to say, like, it was very upsetting and heartbreaking when Justin went out. But I think they did a really good job with why he went out. Like, it was an earned death. The guy was like, leave me, like, let me go, and I won't shoot you. And he was like, I can't. Like, I'm the law. Like, I believe in justice, and I can't. It wouldn't be right for me to let you. And so he could have saved his own life there by letting this guy get away, but he refused. And that's why he died. And I feel like, even though I was sad, it was a really well-done death.
Yeah.
As opposed to certain ones later on in the show, which I will talk about.
I also think Benny gets, like, I think he gets a very noble moment. You don't think so?
That's the one that I was going to complain about.
So, oh my god, I hate that he died, but I love that he was the one that stood up and let Luther know, like, this is the guy, this is what he looks like, get him.
I agree. That moment when Benny stood up and started saying over the phone, like medium build, like, or
six
athletic
foot
build,
two,
6'2",
brown
dark
hair,
hair,
brown eyes.
Yeah, when he started to describe it and the guy was like, I'm warning you, like, you knew Benny was gonna go.
Yeah.
I love that moment for Benny because it was very heroic. Benny has never really been on the front line. He's always in the
and
office.
And usually he's doing something sketchy
he's
for Luther.
He's researching things.
Yeah.
He's never in danger.
He's playing FIFA.
For him to step up and do that, my only problem with Benny's death is that the information that he died to give, Luther didn't ever have to use.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's the last two seasons of this show, I think, are not good.
I liked the fifth season.
It was watchable.
I liked it.
It definitely had its moments. Okay. It was too long. Okay. It was one of those, like, the thing I liked the most about this show, like, I really love the first season because, for the most part, every episode is contained.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they give us a story, they tell us, hey, here's what's happening,
yeah.
Luther's gotta stop them, or this will happen.
Yeah.
And then within the episode, he does stop them.
Mm-hmm.
As it goes on, it becomes more and more like everything, you're two-part episodes. And then by the fifth season, it's a four-part episode,
yeah.
basically. And, like, it's so bogged down with B-plots and C-plots that I don't care about anything else that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Just get the guy. You know who the guy is. Get the guy.
Yeah.
And then it just got frustrating to watch. Like, I think I love watching Luther do his thing.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else I'm less excited about. I do love that this show, unlike a lot of other crime procedurals, really shows you the bad guy and gives you, like, a window into their psyche.
We had a lot, yeah, that's one thing I do really like about this, is the audience figures out who the killer is way before the heroes do.
It's not like, in a lot of, like, these American procedurals, you see the murder, but you never see the murderer.
Yeah.
And then it's basically like, they've got, oh, I've got so many suspects.
Yeah.
And then it's always the second suspect. Almost always.
I kind of really like knowing who it is because
yeah.
we also get to see some of the really depraved things that they do, which really disturbs you and makes you even more, like, you're not just seeing the aftermath of what they've done to people. You are actually seeing how creepy and evil they are.
Yeah.
And I really like that because you're like, come on, Luther, get this person.
Yeah, and I think that's why, like, he is the perfect man for this job, where a lot of these people are underestimating these killers.
Mm-hmm.
That they think, like, oh, it's just a criminal like all these other criminals I've captured before. But no, a lot of these people are really messed up.
They're really freaky.
And you kind of have to be like Luther, who also has some problems,
yeah.
who is a little mentally unstable, to understand what happens when people are pushed to their limits.
One thing that I really like about this show is that I feel like a lot of the killers get, while they're, like, thrillingly, evil.
Yeah.
And just really messed up, almost to the point of being, like, unrealistic how crazy they are. But what I do like is that they do put, like, real-life criminal psychology to work in the show.
Yeah.
Because they do talk about things like escalation, you know? Like, oh, he started doing this, but then he moved on to this. Like, they do talk about real criminal behavior, and
yeah.
I think that's cool to kind of throw in, but then also, like, take it over the top, it'll be great.
Yeah, they really do.
It's a really good show.
They go with it in a way that, like, I think there are a lot of podcasts now, like one of your favorites especially, that focus on killers and
mm-hmm.
why they do the things they do and how they're developed and everything, and so I think they take a lot of liberties and kind of run with things.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see that, like you're saying, it's grounded in a reality where you're like, these are behaviors that are true.
Basis in realism. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which of the killers do you like the most? And I'm not saying, like, which do you like, but at least, like, which character or which killer is most interesting?
Okay. I think that's a great question because in this show, there are so many really weird and interesting killers.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like the Cameron Pell, the guy who was like, I'm going to be the next Spring Hill Jack.
Oh.
I loved that guy
yeah.
because he was creepy. What he was doing was really bad. But I also really liked his weird idea of, like, he was so interested in history of, like, London's weird, like, criminal history. And he was like, I'm going to be the next legend.
And I love any of those characters who, in cinema, who strive to be like, I'm going to be remembered by history.
Mm-hmm.
And they never are.
Yeah.
Because somebody stops them from being remembered.
His thing was really evil. He was the one that kidnapped the bus of kids.
Oh, yeah.
And was driving them out to that abandoned warehouse. And he was going to gas them to death. Like, that is seriously intense for Americans to see, because that kind of thing does not happen
and
on Americans.
Cowardly as hell.
It is. That was the thing, is that he was, like, slicing people's throats.
Yeah.
But then he decided to, like, change his MO, and then he was gonna gas all these children. so that they died, and then get rid of their bodies so that they were never found.
Yeah.
And that's so evil. But yeah, when he started to...
Like, it's making me upset right
when
now.
When he started to put that, the hose or whatever in the car to kind of, like, suffocate them, I was like, what a cowardly way to go. You can't even look at them.
Yeah.
Like,
you can't even accept what you're doing.
Definitely one of my favorites, I think. Ugh. Yeah, I thought that was a really good...
I really loved the twins. And I love the twist that it was two brothers.
See, these are both season two.
I mean, season one and two...
A lot of people don't like season two. I think season two is great.
I think the first three seasons are really good.
But I like those brothers, yeah.
I like the brothers. I wish we got more to them, like, really why they're doing the thing. I guess we get that they're playing a game, but, like, we don't understand...
They're playing against each other. They're trying to see who can rack up, them like, more points.
But we don't know why, or, like...
I agree that it wasn't as explored.
But it's a fascinating idea.
The idea is fascinating, but also each scene where they go and attack people, because in America, any killer, all they do is have a gun.
Yeah.
And it's over, and we're used to it, we're desensitized to guns, and in this show, they have multiple scenes where these guys just go after somebody with a hammer, and it is terrifying.
Yeah.
And is really tense. Like, he just walks into an office building, middle of the day, and just starts attacking people. And it's crazy. It's really, really... I don't know. I just think it's really good television.
Yeah. And, I mean, both of us play Dungeons & Dragons, so to see him using dice that we use for, like, pretend warriors, to see them decide who lives and who dies...
terrifying.
That was also another thing. I'm like, I don't get why they're rolling separate dice, because it didn't seem to matter, and I was very curious about what each dice meant.
It sounds like they didn't really have, like, a really thought-through gameplay written for these guys.
They were just like, this would be really cool visual, and they were right.
I do love how Benny was like, oh, I know what this game is, or, like, I've heard of this thing. Yeah, Benny is so cool.
He's so cool and so dark. I also like, I mean, I know I kind of shit on the later seasons, but I do like, I believe it's in season four, the guy who is military and his father is in prison. Mm-hmm. And he is like, I mean, it's really sad that he's been so messed up by his dad that he's, like, willing to throw his whole life away to try to get his dad out of prison, or at least to, like, have his sentence lessened to 5 years.
Yeah.
Willing to, like, kill every cop he can.
It's interesting.
It's very interesting and very... It's another thing we don't touch in America, where we're like, we don't want to paint our soldiers in a bad light, our veterans, but, like, because we don't want to accept what we do to them in the military.
Yeah.
Like, it's really messed up how a lot of veterans come back. Mm-hmm. And
that is a big problem.
They don't get any mental care.
In America. Yeah.
And so I could easily see that being a thing where it's like, hey, this veteran got arrested because he killed somebody because he was having PTSD.
Yeah.
Like, and then now he's in jail for life. I get why the son would be upsetting.
Yeah.
Or upset. And I think that's what is so captivating about this show, is you watch, and sometimes you get people that are terrible, that are like, there's another guy in that season that picks girls up in his fake taxi, and he'll drive them out into the wilderness and kill them and, like, spread all of their belongings around them. Like, that dude is just disgusting.
Yeah.
But then you get other characters like this that you're like, oh, I get you. Yeah. I mean, I hate you, but I get you.
You can't kill people.
But you know who nobody can ever get is Alice.
Alice is great. I love
her. She comes and goes like a tornado.
I do have to say, like, there's a thing in movies and TV sometimes where there's, like, a female assassin or, like, a hitman. Well, I guess that's the same thing. But, like, sometimes they don't seem real. Like, I don't know. I just feel like Alice, to me, feels somewhat... believable. More than some.
Okay, yeah.
I think Ruth Wilson just does a really good job.
Like, she is a believable sociopath.
Yeah.
Like, you watch her and you're like, yeah, you will kill anybody to survive.
She holds a gun very well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's not afraid to kill, and she does it several times.
I really like Alice.
I got so mad when she killed Luther's new partner in the fifth season that, like,
Seemed unnecessary.
I was really growing to like that character. Yeah, and whenever she did that, that was whenever I, again, yelled at the TV, and I was not
pleased. She was a good character. She was a good cop. She was trying to be a good cop.
She was trying her best.
She was very likable. You and I instantly were like, ooh, I like her.
It felt like she was someone who Luther could have taken under his wing.
Felt like very unnecessary.
Yeah. It felt like they knew how they wanted to end that season.
Yeah.
And didn't quite know how they wanted to get there. And so they kind of sprinted through the last hour of TV.
It's almost like they needed... Because, like, Alice and Luther have been, like, back and forth between, like, being at odds with each other and then being on the same team. And it's kind of like, I guess they needed to, like, give her a really big, like... give him a really big reason to have to turn on Alice.
Yeah. And they really wanted to recreate that, the same shot from the first season where Luther drops, what's his name? I don't remember the guy's name that he drops in the first episode.
Henry Madsen?
Yeah. And then he basically has to do the same to her.
Yeah. Except, but he didn't let go. She did it.
Got his little hand.
It's almost like a metaphor for, like, Luther could let people slip through his fingers, like, Zoe... and actual killers, and it took someone cutting themselves away from him for him to actually let go this time. It was really interesting.
Because, yeah, he can't let go of the job. He can't let go of trying to help people. Even when he tries to run away with her, he comes back.
It's true. I love that scene where Alice comes to Zoe and Mark's house, and she's kind of, like, asking Zoe, she's kind of quizzing Zoe on, like, Luther, like, tell me about him and things like that. And I love that Zoe says, she was like, he believes that we only have one life, and whoever takes that takes everything. And that was such a good line, because it really kind of shows, like, why he's so intent on saving people's lives and going after murderers.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, if he doesn't believe in an afterlife, then
Yeah, this is it.
Yeah.
This is
good.
Everything. This is all of humanity.
Also, I really do like the killers from the final season. Or fifth season.
I love the idea of them.
I thought they were pretty dang cool.
But then
I get that the whole season itself was not the best.
I think it just went off.
I like how we were like, ooh, like she's the.
Ooh, it's her.
She's the therapist of the killer. And then you're like, oh, wait, is she married to the killer?
Yeah, and then you figure that out.
And then their relationship was weird.
But then I didn't understand what he was doing or why. Like, at first it seemed like he was doing something with needles and stuff, but then...
Well, that was the other guy. That was the guy they framed.
But it was still him doing it, though. He's the one who shot with the nails. Mm-hmm. They framed the other guy.
It's almost like he was doing the MO that the other guy would have done to somebody to kill them.
But then so then all of his killings were like that.
I don't know.
Up until a point. And then, yeah, and then he got to, like, he wanted to put his face on people. I don't know. Like, and then how did he get so many of his ceramic faces?
I don't know.
Like, there was a lot, by the final episode, I'm like, I did like this relationship.
Yeah.
I don't anymore.
I also did like the guy who was, like, owned, like, a weird occult bookshop.
Ooh, yeah.
That guy who would, like, kill people and then, like, drink their blood. But he
was
like a vampire.
Yeah, that guy was messed up.
He was just like, yeah, that guy was really interesting.
And it was one where, like, he and Luther, like, sizing each other up. Mm-hmm. That was cool. Where Luther knew it was him immediately and tricks him by, like, dropping his book.
Yeah.
And the guy catches it with his left hand.
Yeah.
And Luther asks for an autograph, and he goes to sign with his left hand, switches to his right.
Yeah.
But Luther already got him. He already knows. Except that's another one of those moments where you think Luther's going to get there and save that woman.
Yeah.
And he's there too late.
That was really sad.
Heartbreaking.
But yeah, I like that. That guy was weird. When he, like, comes into that lady's house...
And just licks her face.
Yeah, it was so creepy.
Hated it. Ugh.
Yeah.
My skin is crawling.
I think this show does a really good job of interesting killers.
I think so. I really do.
Like, you remember a lot of them really well, so.
Well, my stomach is unsettled.
Would you say it's killing you?
Oh, God. I would love to put something else in it.
Is it time for a snack break?
I believe it is.
Welcome to Snack Break, the portion of the podcast where we try a British food. We've got something interesting today. What is it, Sheldon?
It is, these are...
McVitie's Ginger Nuts.
McVitie's Ginger Nut. Yeah, I had never heard of this until somebody brought it up, like, what, a month ago? Somebody was talking about Ginger Nut?
A couple weeks ago, one of our friends said, Danny.
Okay, she was doing the New York Times crossword.
Yeah. She said, there's a clue in here, and it is... a spicy British biscuit. And I was like, spicy? There are no spicy British biscuits. And then I was like, what would a British person think is spicy? ginger. Ginger nut. Anyway, so yeah, we got some, and we are going to try them.
Yeah, and I mean, we've had some McVitie's before. Like,
I know that you're not a huge fan of ginger.
I'm not, but maybe a ginger nut is different. I'm going to tell my head it is.
I can smell it. There's a lot of ginger.
Okay. I mean, maybe it'll be better in a cookie.
All right, give it a try. I will describe what you're doing.
It is very gingery.
Take a little nibble. Oh, it snaps. It's like a ginger snap.
Okay. See, I do like ginger snaps. Oh, there's a lot of ginger coming on. Whoa.
Do you like it, though?
Yes and no. I mean...
I'm gonna try it.
Yeah, go for it. I think it's got more of a sweetness than I was anticipating. The sugar in there is good. And you keep getting punched by that ginger. Like, it is... It's very sharp. It is a little spicy. But I do enjoy the crunch. I think it is a good crunchy cookie. Oh, Dani's now dipping it in her tea.
Gotta dip it in my tea.
Yeah, it's a complex cookie for something that's quite simple. Do you know what the nut is that's in here? I'm trying to place what the nut might be. Or is... Because ginger's a root, correct?
Yeah. I don't think there's any nut in here.
So why do they call it ginger nut?
I don't know.
On our packaging... It is. There are a lot of different languages on here, and English is not one of them. Wow. Yeah, it's in... I see Spanish, and... Oh, also, it has a best before date of last year.
Oh, okay. So, on... What?
Yeah, we should have...
old?
Oh, yeah. I won't tell you.
I googled, are there any nuts in ginger nut biscuit? It says, ginger biscuit is English baked goodie. It is a very popular snack... Flavored with powdered ginger with hints of other spices like nutmeg and cardamom. Sorry, cinnamon. Ginger biscuits are all called, very different. Also called ginger nuts. But they are not the same with the pepper nuts. Again, pepper nuts are more like gingerbread. What is a pepper nut?
It's a pepper nut, yeah. I want one.
Someone said, why are ginger nuts called?
Why are they called?
Ginger nut.
It sounds like nobody knows.
They think that it could mean, like, ginger, like, red hair, and then nut, like, head. A ginger nut is, like, a redhead.
Oh, so these are redhead cookies.
I guess so. They're perfect for me!
Yeah, but they're not really red. Hmm. They're interesting. I mean, I think, like we've said before, I really love chocolate. Yeah. So, like, a lot of the more chocolate candies that we've tried, I am a big fan of. This is something I don't think I could eat a lot of, but I don't dislike them. I think, like, I could easily eat a couple of cookies, like two of them, perhaps, in a sitting. But it's interesting. It is a very, very unique flavor.
These would be great if you put out a platter of cookies at a party, or if we were just gonna, like, drink a bunch of tea and, like, eat some biscuits.
I was gonna say.
I would definitely want some of these in there.
I want to have this with, like, a dirty chai latte.
Mmm! Yeah. Cinnamon on cinnamon. Yeah. You're crazy.
I mean, I love cinnamon. Mm-hmm. But a chai latte is cut down with enough milk, and then there's a little bit of the espresso for the dirty chai, where I think, like, those are a lot of very powerful flavors that would go together well.
This is a pretty good... I think the flavor is very strong. It is spicy.
I think this cookie is a lot like John Luther. I think, like, on its surface, it's a little plain. You see them, and you're like, I think I know what you are.
And then
it smacks you in the mouth. You underestimate this cookie, and you shouldn't, because it hits you hard. And then it leaves you thinking.
Wow.
Man.
What an assessment.
Interesting. I keep staring at the cookie. It's so unassuming.
They look really good. I like how crackly they are.
Yeah.
Like, they're kind of crackly.
And I wonder if that's just because ours are pretty old.
No.
No, I think they, this is the, their like natural,
how I they like look. It. We have a lot of them. We gotta eat them.
Yeah. I can do that when you're gone.
Well, this was a pretty good snack time.
I agree.
You wanna get back to the topic?
Now, back to the episode. So I would love to talk about something which, to me, through everything in the show, is still probably the most powerful moment. And it's, like, at the end of the first season.
Mm.
When Ian Reed kills Zoe.
Oof. That was a rough episode.
I was not expecting that. also because I kind of, like, whenever we first decided to do this, since you had seen most of it, I thought, like, okay, I'm just going to watch a few episodes from each season to get a general sense. So I skipped a lot of the first season. I watched the pilot and then the final two episodes. I know, you guys. I went back and watched the rest of them. I got hooked and watched every episode. That's why it took a while to get this episode out, because we watched all of them. But it hit you in the gut. And it just didn't... You had this, like, sinking feeling the whole episode of knowing, like... This is going to end badly for most people involved.
Yeah.
And you just know it will.
Yeah.
And Reed was just not in a good place.
Nope. And it's sad, too, because, like, Zoe let him right into the house. Because he's, like, a trusted friend.
Yeah, why wouldn't you trust him?
She wasn't worried. She was like, oh, hey, I'll pour you a drink while you wait.
Yeah, you're one of Luther's coworkers and good friends.
Yeah. It was really sad.
Yeah. Man, what about you? Is there a moment that, like, hit you so hard, or what is to you one of, like, the pivotal moments of this series? Is there anything that really stands out to you?
I mean, the first time that Alice, that they talk and he's, like, interviewing her or whatever.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Interrogating
then,
her.
Yeah. And it's just really good.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's gripping, and immediately I think there's a reason why she comes back.
I do also think, after watching season one and two, and then going years without seeing it again, or seeing any more Luther, the little scene of Cameron Pell driving those kids around in the van, with the really sad violin music that was, like, that has stuck with me for years. And I think it was done really well. You really thought all those kids were gonna die.
Oh, yeah.
They do a really good job on this show with fake outs, especially because there are plenty of instances, like Zoe, where the people do die.
Mm-hmm.
So the fake outs you really, really think are gonna happen.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And then in the third season, where Aaron Gray and the other guy.
I hate that guy.
I love the actor, though. I really like that actor.
Great.
But yeah, they were just.
Stark,
yeah. They, whenever they're going after. They think they're going after Luther and get gunned down by the killer. It is, like, the most predictable thing, where you're like, well, both of you are gonna die.
Yeah.
And then they do, and you're like, eh, well. And then...
I do love, though, when Luther listens to the tape of them kind of interrogating Justin, and Justin won't say anything bad about him. And you're like, oh, shit, he's super loyal.
And it makes it even sadder when he does, because, you know, like, he would never give up Luther. Like, even when, like, he really questioned and thought about it and had every reason to do it, he still didn't. That episode, though, also has my least favorite moment in the whole show, and it's when Alice takes a bullet and hits it with a nail and shoots and grazes a guy's shoulder. Like...
Oh, like when she puts it between the doors?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things where, like...
We're like, yes, technically that would have a reaction.
If you wedge a tight enough between the door and then hit it really hard, it could fly at someone.
Well, I mean, it will, because, like, it's the general idea, like, a bullet is hit by a firing pin within a gun.
Yeah.
And that's how the explosion happens. The firing pin ignites the gunpowder and it shoots the projectile.
Mm-hmm.
But it requires some sort of a rifling to make it go straight.
Yeah.
So, like... Once it goes past, like, a couple of feet, you are not going straight with that bullet. It's going in a weird direction. They don't really handle guns great in the show. Like, at the end, or in the final season, Cornelius is shooting a shotgun at Alice. And I thought,
From across the pool.
From across the pool. And the way that it hit the things across from him, I thought, oh, that's a slug, which means, like, a very big bullet that's in a shotgun.
Yeah.
As opposed to a normal shotgun, which spreads out.
Yeah.
But then Luther had to pull, like, the pellets out from her side. And there is no way that they would have gone in the...
That the gripping would be so close.
Yeah. It would have hit all up and down her side and probably her face.
Yeah.
If it would have hit her. But I can look past that because there's so much other great action in this. The way that he runs after people or, like, drives that, like, beat-up little car. I think the action in the show is exciting and really gets your heart racing.
Yeah, I think that's maybe why Luther is so good, is that... It's got really, really good, tense action, But it also has moments that are just as tense, where it's just two people having a conversation.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good mark of
it. And yeah, there are high stakes at all times. Even if it's just a conversation, you know the stakes that are at play.
Yeah. I like it.
Me too.
What was the thing that you were telling me about? Luther says the same thing at the very end of each season.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's at least the first three seasons. Okay. He doesn't do it in 4 and 5, but at the end of the first three seasons, he says, so now what? And I love that. I love that idea of Luther is always just like, he never rests. He can't take in, like, and celebrate, I did this thing, I saved the day, I helped. It's just like, okay, so now what? Now what is my next step?
Interesting.
Where do I go from here? He is always moving forward. He's never looking back.
Yeah. Interesting.
And that, I think, is usually the mark of a troubled character who won't address the past, won't sit in the present, always moving forward onto the next thing, onto the next, romantic relationship, the next crime to solve. He's moving on.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Interesting. How British is it?
It's pretty British, mate. I mean, it does feel like a very good crime procedural, so that in itself is a little universal. Like, we have similar types of shows.
Yeah.
But I think the manner in which they address things, like you said, there aren't a lot of guns.
Yeah.
It's a lot of different weapons. That itself feels very uniquely English.
Yeah, it's true. That, and you are seeing, like, different kinds of criminals from different parts of the country. Yeah, I think it's pretty British. I think when I first started watching it, I was like, really into it, because I was like, ooh, the dark side of London. very cool. Well, are you ready to guess your word?
Yeah. I was going to give you, like, one little bit of trivia for this.
Lay it on.
Yeah, and then we'll go quickly past. Neil Cross, who's the writer, says that John Luther is actually a combination of Sherlock Holmes and Columbo.
That is something I was going to talk about on this, was that by, like, the third season, Luther has done such a good job of, like, picking up on things really quickly when he's having a conversation with somebody, and
it's that
it reminds me of Sherlock, and I almost, like no shade at the Sherlock, BBC Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch. I love that show.
Especially, again, first few seasons are incredible.
I love that Sherlock, but I would say Luther is also, if you're interested in, like, old school Sherlock Holmes, Luther is a really good, like, modern version.
I think to a point. I think a lot of Sherlock Holmes is figuring out, like, the mystery, and it's not about the mystery. It's about solving the crime, which I think are two different things.
True.
But I think in that sense, it is a lot like Columbo, which, did you ever watch much Columbo? I know it's
really
an American show from the 70s. My grandpa loved it. Oh, Columbo is...
Peter Falk?
Yeah, Peter Falk is incredible, and I mean, he's this weird, like, introverted kind of detective that is in his own head mumbling to himself a lot that people don't understand him. And because of that, like, he's underestimated, but he'll come in and he'll just get a crime scene, you know? He'll look around and,
Do we think that show Frost is the British Columbo? Because don't they have the same hat?
Oh, this is a good theory. This is a good theory. We'll have to look into it.
Okay.
But yes, that was one thing I wanted to point out. But yes, now I am ready for the word of the day.
Okay.
Or the phrase.
So, this is a phrase.
Okay.
This one was submitted by Julie Evans.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you. We love getting new phrases and words.
It's very helpful.
Especially from actual British people.
Yeah, so that we don't have to depend on the internet to tell us.
So, the phrase is, money for old rope.
Money for old rope.
So if you were going to describe something as being money for old rope.
I think that probably means you've got, like, no money right now. Like, if you're looking to buy something, you can ask, like, hey, mate, can you cover me? And you're like, I've got money for old rope. Which is like, I've got pennies right now. Like, I can buy you that old rope that's falling apart. I can't buy you this nice climber's rope that you want. I've got money for old rope. That's what I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's incorrect. It sounds really good, though.
I should be in charge of writing what words mean.
That sounds really good. I like that a lot. That's a really good interpretation. So money for old rope, according to Julie. And I did look this one up online.
Just to verify.
Yeah. So she says, an old expression that comes from the time of hangings. After the crowd had watched the prisoner hang, the rope would be cut up into small pieces and sold as souvenirs, hence money for old rope. Nowadays, it's used to mean when you pay for something that's not really worth it. For example, I hired a gardener to clean up the yard. He only trimmed a few shrubs and then charged me £50. Money. Talk about money for old rope.
Okay.
So I Googled it and it did say like easy money or like money that you didn't really work that hard for.
Gotcha.
Money for old rope. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, that is an interesting one. I like that it comes from Hangman's Noose.
I decided to include it for this episode because it reminded me of that that killer in Luther, the guy who was like drinking the blood.
Yeah.
Because he was like, people have always been buying like, you know, pieces of Hangman's Noose and like handkerchiefs of like.
It's right there in plain sight. See, if I was Luther, I would have picked up on that.
You would have picked up on it immediately.
See, I'm always good at like reading detective stories. Like I would read growing up, like Hardy Boys, Encyclopedia Brown, and Nancy Drew, and I was always like, I'm gonna be such a good detective.
Mm.
But no, I would be so bad.
Damn. One day.
No, I don't do well with blood. Like, if I was a cop, the first day I would be like, I'm gonna vomit and then quit.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you everyone for joining us for Luther. We only touched on a little bit of it. I could talk about Luther forever, probably.
Yeah, please jump in on our Facebook page whenever we post this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Let us know your favorite episodes.
Let us know your favorite characters and which killer is your favorite.
Yeah. And let us know which part of the show you dislike the most. Because from what I can tell online, people really love the show, but also acknowledge there are parts that they don't like as much
as
the rest.
It's true.
Yeah.
It sounds like all the people that like it, they're like, oh yeah, that season sucks, that episode sucks, but I love this show. Anyway, thank you for joining us. You can send us an email if you want. We're anglophilespodcast@gmail.com, files with an F.
Mm-hmm.
We're also on Instagram and Facebook, so you can find us there.
Keep calm, and now what?